Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone. Welcome back after a couple of weeks hiatus back to the Rugby Punted podcast. I'm your host, your new and improved host, Ronnie. But I'm also joined with my co-host, Nick.
New, maybe improved. I don't know. That's up for debate there, Ronald. But yeah, we've been MIA for a couple of weeks, I think 2 to 3 weeks. Yeah.
Feels longer. And before that, we had like 8 weeks holiday, so quite honestly, are we still even a podcast?
I feel like we're back in our student days, bunking class, not really there for much, showing up when we feel like it. Hey, Ronald.
Yeah, we always seem to have some sort of excuse that gets in the way, but then we apologize. But let's see if we can get back into a bit of a rhythm. And we say this at the back end of the Six Nations now that that's behind us, and we want to start now. So we're actually really idiots.
Well, I think we've timed it to perfection because we're here just in time to give Ireland a little bit of shit. So,
Yeah, that's right. So how have you been, young Nikki?
Yeah, no, all right. Hey. So I actually played a little bit of rugby today, Ronnie. You won't believe it, but me and my fine old age of 21, I took to the field of the scrum machine again.
You took to the field of the scrum machine. Was this a bet, a dare? What happened?
Well, let me tell you, a long, long time ago. No,
Let's
so
get to the point.
dear old Nick here was taking the recycling out of the golf cart and a la battery, le
No,
pouf.
because just for everyone to know, Nick now lives in an estate that requires a golf cart to travel around. So yes, please continue.
Yes, well, on that, before I get to the rest of my story, Ronald visited me 3 or 4 weeks ago. And while sipping on his coffee in the garden, almost got taken out by two golf balls. So the real hazard, real risk. I was taking out the recycling and the golf cart battery decided, nope, not today. It's going to load shed me. So I had to push the golf cart all the way home, probably.
So when you're talking about scrum machine, you meant you scrum the golf cart down the road.
Yeah, and let me tell you, Ronnie, I've still got it.
Were you in the tight head or the loose head position?
Standard tight head, where it counts, pushing, scrumming. And let me tell you, I got that golf cart home.
Why? Why? I would have just left it where it was, got a new battery, and Bob's your uncle, driven it back.
Yeah, well, Bob wasn't here this week, so I had to make a plan. But
Fair enough.
you've also had some big moves, gone over to Germany. You're looking very German at the moment. But I hear there's
Danke.
a drinking game that's continued over there that we thought was made up for many years.
Yeah, well, I didn't think we were going to talk about this, but sure. Many years ago, you'll know that when we played with our German friends at the university, we played a game called Flunky Ball, which I thought was a completely made-up game in Namibia or South Africa. And it turns out Flunky Ball is quite a common German game. So I played a bit of Flunky Ball, and not only with fellow students, played Flunky Ball with some professors too. I haven't yet to win a round of Flunky Ball, but yeah, since it's a drinking game, are there any real winners or losers?
That's also very true, but it doesn't surprise me that you struggle to win at it, Ronnie. I mean, you struggle to win at Super Brew too, so the trend's just continuing there. But
Fair enough. Shall we now speak about who's where on Super Brew now so that we can prove that you're a liar?
well, now that you bring it up, Ronnie, why don't we just delve right into the Six Nations? We've got a lot to cover. We're going to look at this past weekend's game, but also a bit of a review on the Six Nations because I don't think you thought I would do it, but I did go back and listen to our episode to find out the things that you raised and said. So we can have a bit of a chat about them today. But to start off, I think we both need to give a huge shout out to Trevor Hansen. He came first in our Super Brew pool, 24.25 points. He's narrowly beaten out Team Forkett. That's Jan Roetman. Narrow, narrow win there. But Trevor, if you're listening to the show, bud, get in touch. We've got some May Fokchor merch to give to you. Well done on a big win, man. And I know it wasn't hard to beat Ronnie, but well done for beating the other 1,600 of us.
What about Jan? Does he get nothing?
You know what? Should we be generous, Ronald?
Yeah, executive decision. If Jan just so happens to listen to the podcast, he can also get a little something.
Yeah, so Jan Roetman, if you are listening to the show, you too beat Ronnie. So you can have
Yes.
some May Fokchor merch. There we go. There we go. But Ronnie, on to the real things. Where did you come
No,
into
hang
all
on. Yeah, okay, good. I thought we were moving on. So we'll start off with you. Let's start from the bottom. Where did you finish?
Yeah, so the honest man that I am, I finished 845th on the log. Top half, top half.
Top off. Okay, sure, whatever. And I finished over 100 positions ahead of you. Again, I just as per usual.
100 positions. Your maths is now the bad one on this show, Ronnie. Hey, 768th place. I'll give it to you. You did beat me there. I have a couple of tough pills to swallow after our Six Nations preview episode and my predictions there. So they did come to bite me in the ass. My predictions in the first two rounds certainly left me lagging throughout the rest of the tournament. But let's just take a look then, Ronnie. Obviously, France have won the Six Nations. England came in second, Ireland in third, Scotland in fourth, Italy fifth, Wales sixth. But you and me both predicting France would win the Six Nations. So maybe we got lucky on that one, or maybe we know a thing or two, hey?
Yeah, but you didn't mention here whether we said a couple of episodes back, or probably even the last episode, whenever we spoke about this, whether France would get a Grand Slam or not, which obviously they did not. But did we make any mention of that?
No, so we both predicted France would lose to Ireland.
Mm.
We thought that would happen because we discussed the home game and that one being the decisive factor. But as we all know now, France did topple Ireland in Dublin. So a good win for them. Second place.
I just want to, I don't know if you heard, but France toppled Ireland was the word you chose. Do you believe that that's an apt word to use in this case?
No, I actually don't, Ronnie, because Ireland are not at the top. And to topple someone, they have to be at the top. So no. France beat Ireland in Dublin. Let me correct my figure of speech there.
Yeah, good. Carry on now. Who came in second?
See, this is why I keep you around, you know. Keep it honest. Keep it honest. So second place, you had Ireland there. You were wrong. I had Scotland there, and I was a little bit more wrong.
Yeah, that was a ridiculous. Yeah, that honestly was ridiculous. You got the next three completely swapped around. But yeah, I don't know how you got to Scotland because, and we'll talk about that in a moment.
Well, to be fair, Ronnie, I did predict Ireland in third. You thought Scotland would be in third. So I'm right on 2 out of 3. You're right out of 1 out of 3. So therefore, I win.
No, hang on. I feel like you're just lying now. You're actually right. Okay, I'll leave it at that.
See, I did some maths tutoring lessons during the off season. Good at it now.
During your golf cart scrumming sessions in between those.
Exactly. Pythagoras and things like that, you know, how to get it up the driveway.
It's embarrassing. Carry on.
Yeah, Ronnie. So England, Italy and Wales, we both predicted the bottom three. England coming out to be the surprise package in the Six Nations, but we'll get onto them in a little bit. Let's take a look at the first game from this weekend, which was Italy versus Ireland. 17 points to the Italians at home, 22 to the Ireland. A much more narrow win than anyone would have predicted there, hey, Ronald.
Yeah, I think if you look at some of the bookies, they actually predicted a relatively narrow win for Ireland. We obviously went bigger. I thought that it would be a complete blowout. But as often is the case when there's a really strong side like Ireland playing, you know, relatively weak side like Italy, it's a much closer game. Ireland goes to sleep a bit, or the stronger side goes to sleep a bit, and the less stronger side tends to do a bit better. They're a little bit more motivated. And yeah, look, I was very impressed with how Italy performed. Ireland, they should be asking themselves some questions.
I think it's especially telling considering Ireland were on the back of a defeat to France in Dublin, if you didn't hear about that. And, you know, you would have expected them to come out really firing. You know, this was their shot to still try and win the Six Nations. It was in the balance at this stage. And they got a very, very narrow win there. For me, there were only three players that sort of stood out in that game, being Dan Sheehan. He got a hat-trick. Mac Hansen and Hugo Keenan. Outside of those three, I really feel like the Irish didn't capitalize. They didn't bully the Italians. And although the Italians may have finished second last in the Six Nations, they can be proud of some of the performances they put on.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree. And it's been a number of years that we've spoken about this. You know, Italy are usually the whipping boys. But, you know, a couple of seasons now, a couple of games in each season, you know, they perform. And I think the Italians can actually be proud. You're absolutely right. A couple of their players really put their hands up. And, you know, they're heading in the right direction. New coaching staff too. And let's see what they can pull off.
I mean, we have to give a shout out to Andre Capuoso. That guy is unbelievable. The fact that he struggles to start for Toulouse, but does so well for Italy, he should, honestly, he deserves a lot of praise for what he does for that side. But, you know, the Italian discipline really hurt them in this fixture. They may have gotten over the line had they been a little more disciplined, because they did get one yellow card, one red card, and then three injured forwards in the first half, you know, really depleted their strength in this fixture. You know, they would have been looking to challenge Ireland much, much better. And I think that played a little bit of havoc, because whilst they are a good side, they don't necessarily have the depth needed to compete at that level and when injuries do strike.
Yeah, a little bit concerning for Ireland, of course, is the retirement of Conor Mahoney as well as Kian Healy. That's, you know, what lies ahead for Ireland in that sense.
I definitely won't miss Peter, but Kian and Conor, they're greats of the Irish team. I really, really enjoyed them over the years, especially Kian Healy. He was a player I really, really enjoyed for a long, long time. But yeah, three legends of the game in Ireland, and I wish them well in their next phases of their careers and retirements. As an overall look at these two sides in the Six Nations, I think Ireland will be quite disappointed, from being on track for the Grand Slam until they lost to France, to ending in third place. Yes, they can say they didn't have their coach and whatnot, but I think a very disappointing Six Nations from an Irish perspective.
Yeah. I agree with you, and I'm sure we'll unpack it in a moment to, again, just an overall review. But yeah, I think Ireland can be a little bit disappointed.
Then the Italians, you know, we say again here, they're building a strong team. It's hard to know where you place a side like this, because yes, they play some good rugby these days. They're not the walkovers that they used to be. But in saying that, in the previous two games before they faced Ireland, they shipped 120 points. So, you know, where are they actually in the Six Nations? They're not the whipping boys anymore, because that was Wales the last two seasons. But in the same breath, are they really competing for one of the top three or four positions?
Yeah, look, it's very challenging. You know, they're playing traditionally big rugby powerhouse nations in, you know, France, England, Ireland, you know, Scotland, and I suppose Wales too. But, you know, they're a young side. They've got a lot of young players that show a bit of promise, a couple of players that are perhaps of Italian descent or obtained residency there, but not necessarily from Italy. So there's a sort of a light at the end of the tunnel for the Italians. But yeah, it's a bit of contrast if you look at the likes of Ireland, which have an aging side. You know, I think the Italians can look forward to some good performances in the future, and we hope that they grow and we hope that they do better.
Yeah, we'll have to keep an eye on them going forward. Ronnie, over then to Wales versus England, and this was a sad game to see. Wales going down 14 points to 68. It's the largest ever win in the Six Nations, England setting some records with that one. And I think, as much as we want to get into what's going on in Wales and everything, some perspective should probably be offered in this game, and it came from none other than Alma Kapalma. Alma Smit, the South African rugby journalist overseas at the moment, she said to her Welsh friends, guys, remember, South Africa lost to New Zealand 57-0, and that game featured players like Sia, Irban, Bongi, Lukanyo Am, Mapimpi, all of these guys that are now Springbok legends featured in a loss like that. So hopefully this is the point of turning Wales around. They've now lost 17 games on the trot. That's also a streak for any tier one nation. But most telling, they've lost more games in a row now than Richie McCaw lost in his entire career that spanned 148 tests. So there's some perspective for you.
Yeah, that's a whole bunch of perspective. But yes, just going back to the 57-0 loss to New Zealand, it's strange that we as South Africans often bring that one up as the one that hurt the most. You know, we've suffered some serious losses as Springboks around that period, but we often go back to that 57-0 against New Zealand, and that one really hurt a lot, perhaps more than some of the other Brighton miracles or whatever other miracles happened in the world. But yes, look, Wales, it can only get better. Is that worth saying? Can we say that? It can only get better. They've fallen quite some distance, and it is unfortunate. England, very dominant performance. You know, scoring 10 tries, like you mentioned, a record defeat. So that's good for them. You know, they're onwards and upwards. And yeah, let's for their sake, we hope that they can string it together, some of these good performances. For our sake, You know, we like to bash on England a bit, so we hope that they get it wrong and slip over a banana peel at some point.
Yeah, absolutely right there, Ronnie. Well, you say, can it get any worse for Wales? They're going to face Japan next in July. And Japan's also a team on a downward trend. They're what, side by side in the world rankings. So that's going to be an interesting one. If they can get a win there, maybe that turns things around a little bit for them. But, Gats, he got fired. That was the last episode we did. And Matt Sherratt was put in charge for the Six Nations. Whether or not he stays on, we're not sure yet. Welsh Rugby haven't come out to announce what their plans are for a coach and for a director of rugby and so on. But yeah, Wales needs a lot of effort pumped into there because the decline of them will be really sad for world rugby.
Yeah, because if you go and look at the history of the Six Nations, Wales have been up at the top many times. They've put together incredible performances, and to watch a team die out like this and really what can they do to turn things around? It's just, I don't know so much. We've already established that, yes, everyone's saying it's an old team, it's an age side, but we go and look at the average ages then and experience. There are other teams in the Six Nations with way older sides and way less experienced sides. So yeah, let's hope that Wales can turn it around. Like you mentioned, Japan coming in July. That's going to be a very interesting matchup. Japan's obviously, like you've said, they're a downward trend and hoping to turn things around. And it's going to be really sad for the loser of those games because, we want Japan to do well, but we also want Wales to do well.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see what the results are in the July mid-year tour that's coming up for them. But then to look at it from an English perspective, they'll be really chuffed with this result. They scored 10 tries in that fixture. You've seen England now moving away from that rigid box kicking game plan led by Alex Mitchell to playing a bit more expansive. I've heard from some of the other rugby shows that that was a sort of player standing up to Steve Borthwick. If that's the case, that's great because it has seen a big shift in them. And this is probably the point in the episode where I need to eat a big spoon of humble pie here because I predicted England would probably be at the bottom of the Six Nations this year, fighting it out with Wales. And they actually came in second and could have won it had Scotland toppled France. So, yeah, well done to England. I think Borthwick got the selections absolutely spot on for the game against Wales. They'd been, struggling to defend out wide. Selecting players that run the ball versus kicking the ball, got them into that space. And yeah, 10 tries speaks volumes.
I hear what you're saying, but I'd like to counter it. Alistair Coetzee came in with the Springboks and he tried to introduce this expansive running game into the Springboks, and we had one or two okay-ish games and we had some record losses as well. So when Rassie came back, he tried to roll things back, go back to what we are traditionally strong as Springboks. And England have a traditional strong style, and turning to an expansive game, a running game, is going against that. So sure, I think, maybe he got the selection right for this instance, this game against a weakened Wales. But I think England need to be careful not to move too far away from what their DNA is.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think the big test of that will come in November, where the Southern teams tour north. And it'll be quite telling what comes of that when they face some strong opposition to this new game plan. But I also want to just talk about Finn versus Marcus Smith now, Ronnie. You are banned from saying that, oh, it's great Marcus Smith's at fullback because he's got a few more seconds on the ball. Can say
Well,
anything.
you just said it for me.
What do you make of Marcus Smith shifting to fullback and then struggling sometimes to get selected there, sometimes on the bench, without using the phrase that I've just mentioned?
But that forms the basis of my point completely, And okay, so firstly, I will go against the whatever ban. I'll challenge the ban and say, look, I think Marcus Smith with an extra second or two on the ball at 15, that's what he needs. But I will say his struggles are, of course, because of the inconsistency in selection. He plays there one week, he plays 10 another week. And yes, the modern day 10, 15 should be quite versatile and be able to just slot in seamlessly in both. But, the guy's got to settle. The guy's got to settle in a position. He's got to get comfortable. He's got to do that at both 10 as well as potentially 15 now. He's got to, there's got to be that shift in his mind. He's got to know which direction he's going, and so he needs a bit of time there. So we can't judge him based on what's this now, five games or whatever, as well as a couple of performances last season. The guy's got to play. He needs game time at 15. He needs to understand that over the next, 5 or 10 games, he's probably going to play 40% at 15. He's going to play another 40% at 10, and he's going to sit on the bench for 20%. He needs this understanding of what his future looks like so that he can start shifting his focus in whatever way.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how these roles develop, because before the Six Nations, Finn Smith was on no one's radar. Now he's being spoken of as a potential Lions selection. So there's a lot going on up north, and it always is like this in a World Cup cycle. Players coming in, players going out, players adjusting positions and teams experimenting with things. So I'm very keen to keep an eye on England. I do eat my words from a few weeks ago. And yeah, well done to the English for their performance in the Six Nations. I think they far outdid my expectations.
Yeah, I suppose you were just trying to be a little bit controversial, weren't you?
Possibly. Ronnie, over then to France, the last game of the Six Nations in Paris. It was the game to decide who ended where, because had Scotland won this one, England would have won the Six Nations. France would have ended in second. But yeah, ultimately France getting a 35-16 point win. It was 16-13 at halftime. So Scotland only getting a penalty in the second half, France really turning it on. What did you make of this game?
Yeah, I think it speaks about, the strength of both sides, where they ended up in the Six Nations. This is kind of what you'd expect, right? So I think if France was at 100, Scotland would be at 55, right? This is the reality. Scotland's slightly above half as good as France. And this is unfortunate. I love the Scots. I really want them to do really well. I want them to finish second or first in the Six Nations. I desperately want them to actually win it. But they're a sort of middle of the Six Nations side. They're so consistently there, and I suppose the score reflects that. Strong performance. They were close. They were in it at halftime, and then the strength of the French side just they went into a whole nother gear and closed it out and won the game quite comfortably. Bielle Béret, probably the most exciting player in my opinion at the moment in world rugby. And, the tries this guy is scoring, it's unbelievable. He's the Northern Hemisphere's answer to Chesham Colby.
Well, it certainly seems that way, scrum cap and all, Ronnie. But yeah, speaking of him, his record is unbelievable. 8 tries in this tournament, that's a Six Nations record in any format of the competition. But he's also scored 18 tries in 19 tests, and he's just 21 years old. So yeah, he's off to a flying start for Les Blues, that's for sure.
Thomas, what were you doing at 21?
Probably doping with you in Hatfield Square, hey? Oxford or something like
that. I was studying for sure.
You were studying? Engineering
week or something.
Yeah, studying the bottom of a brandy jug there from old Wesley at Oxford's. Yeah, Ronnie. Thomas Ramos, he had a big game. 20 points out of the 35 scored by the French this weekend. That guy doesn't seem to miss when he's kicking for post. Also a top quality player. But I'm keen for your thoughts on France using the 7-1 split and being the revolutionaries of world rugby, Ronald.
So my opinion, really, it does not matter. The only opinion that matters in this case is Mr. Matt Williams. So what I have to say doesn't mean a thing.
Yeah, I have no issue with France using the 7-1. Well done for them for trying to catch up a little bit in the race to innovate. Matt, though, probably having heart palpitations every time it goes on.
It's against the spirit of the game, sure thing.
Gregor Townsend's also one that's jumped on that bandwagon. It's against the spirit of the game. But look at this score, 16-13 at halftime. France bring on the Le Baguette squad. And there we go. They get 35-16, only giving 3 more points to Scots the whole game. Did bite them in the bum the week before when DuPont got injured. So, it's risk versus reward. What can you do in a situation like that? But I have no issue with them deploying that in these games.
Yeah, we have to be honest as South Africans. If another team came along with the 7-1 split as an innovation, we'd also probably at some point have said that, it is against the spirit of the game. But just because we came up, or did we really come up with it just because we sort of made it mainstream? We're all on board for it. We see no problem with it. But I do. The reality is, I don't see a problem with it. It is a brilliant exploitation, legal exploitation of the rules. And I love it. So if France are doing it, if other teams are jumping on board, at some point you're going to have too many forwards, and then the team that has the most backs on the bench is probably going to run circles around all those forwards. So let's see what teams can do in terms of innovation.
No, that's very true, Ronnie. Very, very true. Well, let's get on to some of our Six Nations statements that we made prior to the season starting here. I picked out a couple of them, and I'll be the first one to get humbled, Ronnie, before we go on to some of the dumb things that you said. So my statement in our preview episode was that Steve Borthwick would be out as England head coach at the end of the tournament. I think that one speaks volumes considering they finished second. I don't think Steve's going anywhere.
Yeah, no, Steve's not going anywhere. Look, I think that was a really clickbaity statement that you made there. Yeah, bold statement for sure.
Well, Ronnie, speaking of bold statements, what about your one to say Maro Etoje is not a captain? How did he do in the Six Nations?
I think you misquoted me there. I don't think I said that he is not a captain. I think what I meant to have said is that Maro Etoje is better not being a captain. You know, that's just something that he doesn't need to focus on. And I feel the same way about Eben Etzebeth. Eben Etzebeth can captain my side any day of the week. But he's far more dangerous if he doesn't have to worry about, you know, the duties of a captain.
Fair enough, Ronnie. Fair enough. Well, I think Etoje deserves some praise. He seems to have led England quite well through this tournament. Players seem to be following him. And I've seen a lot of talk that he's the shining star heading into the Lions captaincy potentially. So it'll be interesting to see him versus Caelan Doris in the fight for that one. Then you and me both, Ronnie, seem to be blinded by loyalty to Scotland or just a love for the underdogs, because we both thought that they would be the dark horses of this competition. And I think the answer to that came best from Dan Bigger, where he said, Scotland every year win the sum total of diddly squat. So
the reality is they are so unbelievably consistently average. You know, we talk about how many times do we talk about the Vodacom Sharks or the Natal Sharks, sorry, I don't know, Hollywood Bet Sharks. And, you know, they're just middle tier, middle of the log team. They don't do the worst. They also don't really do the best. And that is sometimes a little bit more frustrating than any of the other alternatives. Just like do something crazy, please. Just do something. If it turns out to be absolute rubbish, sure, at least we know, but just do something different, please.
No, I agree with you there, Ronnie. Then you and me also both saying Ireland are no longer the big threat that they used to be. I think that statement proved to be quite true.
Yeah, I think the reality is that Ireland are a little bit aged. They've lost, they've just lost now three very major players leaving the squad. We don't really understand what's in the pipeline and what's coming through. There's a bit of a question mark with at 10 for them. You know, they're searching for the Johnny Sexton replacement, and do they have him, do they not have him? We don't really know. There's some promise but unsure, so Ireland were an incredible side two years ago, 2023, 2022. They peaked just the right time going into the World Cup. Unfortunately for them, they didn't progress very far outside of the quarters. And I think I'd be a little bit concerned if I was an Irish supporter about what the next 2-3 years hold for them.
Yeah, it looks like they need to innovate a little bit and rebuild, especially now losing three more key players in that squad. You know, Craig Casey's probably going to have to step up to fill up the bench role that Conor Murray was occupying. But yeah, going to be interesting to see how they build. And then lastly, Ronnie, your comment that Ireland wouldn't need Andy Farrell for the Six Nations. They're professional players, you said. They didn't need their coach. Would Andy have made a difference to the outcome of this tournament?
No, absolutely not. I don't think this is all. You highlighted, I think you searched long and hard to try and find something that was ridiculous that I said, and I still end by this. I don't think it's ridiculous. We could probably attribute, say, something minor, like 10% of their performance or lack of performance to the absence of Farrell. But yeah, by and large, I think it's other underlying issues and not the absence of Farrell.
Fair enough, Ronnie. Well, that takes us through the Six Nations tournament that's been. There's now URC Champions and Challenge Cup action, Lions Tour coming up, and then the July Internationals. But just a couple of things in the news. It's great to see Damian Willemse, Sasha Ngoma Zulu, and Suleiman Hartzenberg returning for the Stormers. Some good Springbok quality making its way back into the setup just in time for us to get them back into the national setup too. And speaking of that, Ronnie, Felix Jones back with the Bokke. Did Rassie send him there? Are we going to see that in Chasing the Sun 3?
No, but there's obviously the conspiracy theorists are jumping on this, but no, I don't think so. I think it's only natural for a coach after what, how long was he with the Springboks? 5-6 years, you know, to look onwards and upwards. I think he went onwards, but not necessarily upwards. Although we could say that the Six Nations could be considered a success for England. But I think Felix wants to do cutting edge stuff. He wants to be at the coalface, and I think he gets that with Rassie. He was out of a job or between two jobs. We're not quite sure what exactly. I mean, we're not privy to all the conversations. And Rassie called him back. But interestingly, I know sometimes we punt other shows here, but the conversation between Rassie and Felix, I thought was exceptional. And I like that our national coach is willing to do that. So if you haven't seen it, seriously, go check it out on YouTube.
Yeah, your dad actually sent that through to me and it's on my to-watch list. I haven't seen it yet, so I will be giving that a look in. Ronnie, Rassie also moving for the Six Nations and Rugby Champs to line up. I don't think there's not much to chat on there. I think that's an excellent idea for player welfare. But something else, Ronnie. Ma Nonu, at the age of 42, has just signed for Toulon as a medical joker. What an animal. What a beast and what a legend.
I don't have any words for that. He's clearly in incredible shape and, yeah, legend.
And then our lovely friends in Cape Town, Ronald, they're back at it. R1,600 for a season ticket to watch the last four games that the Stormers are going to be playing at home this year. And a chance to miss the ballot to win Bok tickets to see them take on. Honestly, the overreaching that these Cape Townians do for these tickets is infuriating. It's nonsense. The ballot system didn't work last year. Stop trying to be different, Cape Town. You are still part of South Africa and do it like the rest of us too.
Yeah.
Ronnie, then the Mayfoktcho moment of the week. There can be only one. It has to go the way of the French winning the Six Nations on the back of a loss to England. They stuck with it. They did their jobs. And yeah, walking away with a comprehensive victory and a title that they haven't won in a few years.
Good for them.
That's it for this week on the Rugby Punted. If you've enjoyed the episode, smash that like button, subscribe, and join us again next week for more rugby insights, banter, and the right amount of tears. Don't forget to join us on Superbrew 2. We'll see who's got the best rugby predictions and who's just winging it.